It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 304 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, I have a terrific interview with Zach Davis, the reinventor of sorts of a really great crime western called Crimson Rider. And he's made some pages available to me, which I really like. It's a very fascinating story with lots of layers to it and some really interesting things that made this concept way ahead of its time, which is something we'll talk about during the interview. We talk about how Zach put together the art team, about how you can access Crimson Rider, as well as other things he's got coming in the future. He's got a lot of good things to say, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy listening to our conversation. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Zach Davis, the creator of The Crimson Rider, which is a really interesting book coming out. How are you doing today, Zach?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good, good. Why don't you, since you're the first time on the podcast, why don't you tell us a little bit about your past with comics? When did you start reading them? What characters are your favorites? What kind of things like that?
Okay. I started when I was a kid. I only read them like intermittently when we would go to this used bookstore. I'd pick them up here and there. And then I got more into them like freshman year of high school, which I think is a little backwards. Mm-hmm. I like your typical Batman, Swamp Thing's a favorite of mine. I really like Hawkman. I really like crime comics. That's my go-to. Mm. So, yeah, right now I'm a little low on Marvel, but pretty big into DC and Image and stuff like that. So
cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm with you there. I'm low on Marvel, too. I think I only buy Daredevil these days. I buy a whole long line of DCs, including the Batman stuff. I'm a big Bat fan, so.
Yeah, Tom King's been doing great work.
Yeah, it didn't start out that way. The first storyline I was a little puzzled by, but as it's gone along, it's gotten much better. The War of the Jokes and Riddles was really terrific. I thought it was the best stuff.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Anyway, let's get on to what you're doing today. So why start to create comics? Because, see, I talk to people, and I don't understand how you make the jump from that. I can't make that jump. So you're obviously going someplace I haven't been. I don't understand how you go from being somebody who reads comics to somebody who can write them well. So talk to me about that. How did you decide to make the leap into creating comics?
Well, it actually started in probably 10th or 11th grade. What happened was, me and some of my friends wanted to make a zombie film. And we started panhandling around lunchtime. And we're trying to collect enough money from panhandling from people's lunch change to make a movie. And we were like 3 weeks in. And we had made like $27. So I thought, why not start making comics? But I didn't know anybody who could draw. So it kind of took a dive, fast forward to like 14 years later. And through all that time, I was still talking about making comics, and I finally decided to jump onto something. And I figured a pretty good spot would be to take a public domain character like the Crimson Rider and try and shape it into my own thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Now, why zombie? Were you a fan of Walking Dead at that point?
No, I actually hadn't started reading the book then. I've always been a fan of like B horror movies, trauma film like Toxic Avenger stuff. I don't know why. I've always been drawn to that kind of stuff. I just kind of like the cheese of it all, you know.
Well, it's interesting because you were kind of ahead of the curve then, because you know Walking Dead came along and all of a sudden zombies are everywhere.
Right.
So you got. Did you ever make a film or how did that work?
No, that never panned out. That never did pan out. Too expensive. But then, you know, making comics is not that cheap either, really. But a little bit less expensive than making a movie, I would think.
Well, you know, now you have the cameras can shoot film. You can do all kinds of, your phone can take video if you need to. So if you wanted to make a zombie film now, it'd probably be $27 would come in handy.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah. So, well, anyway, no, Chris, you mentioned something I did not know. You said that the Crimson Rider is a public domain character. Can you fill us in a little bit on the background of the Crimson Rider?
Absolutely. It was in 1939. Well, there was a. It's kind of an anthology book, Jumbo Comics in the 30s and 40s, and Jumbo Comics number 9 was the first appearance of the Crimson Rider. And that company would use pen names for their writers, which I thought was pretty interesting. So the writer is actually credited as being Fred Sandy. But the speculation is that Fred Sandy was Jack Kirby. So Jack Kirby has supposedly wrote the Crimson Rider originally with art by Lou Fine. And so the book ran for several issues, and it's basically the same premise as mine, you know, where a gang kills her dad and she dons a mask and a hat and a cape and goes and hunts him down for vengeance. Mm-hmm. But what I thought was pretty cool is once she hunted them all down and that was done, she teamed up with another character that was in the same line, Jumbo Comics, named Wilton of the West. And then she rode around with him and helped him out, and then that kind of just died out. So that's kind of what happened there.
I'm kind of fascinated by this whole thing because, you know, wow, was this book ahead of its time? I mean, a female lead in a story like this, particularly a Western? This book is decades ahead of its time.
Definitely.
How did you come across it?
I have a bunch of ideas to make my own stuff, but I just thought I kind of digging up old stuff that hasn't been used in a long time and giving it breathing new life into it. And I came across that. I was looking up public domain superheroes and I came across that, which, I mean, she's not really a superhero. And I thought, that's pretty interesting. Like you said, you know, it's a girl, a teen girl. She's teenaged and she's going to go hunt down these bad boys, you know. And then I kind of thought of a new twist on it, which is what, you know, with her at the end of her life in my book, where mm-hmm. she's standing in line at the gallows mm-hmm. telling her story.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was well told. I really like that because it draws you in. See, I didn't know any of this. It makes sense, though. You know, we kind of think that, oh, in the past, they were dumb. They didn't know how to do women. They did them all badly. But if you do some research like you did and that you come across these characters that are pretty interesting. I mean, this is way back before, you know, probably around the time of women's movements and stuff like that getting started, you know, probably around the time for the vote and stuff like that. So maybe somebody, you know, glommed into that and decided to do this story, which I didn't know anything about that. That is so interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. With older comics, I think there's a lot of great ideas in there, but we've just evolved and the stories aren't necessarily for kids anymore. So they're a little bit more fun to read as an adult, whereas you read the old stuff and it's kind of, you know, you can tell it's played for kids. So, mm-hmm. yeah, mine is not for kids. There is some teeth to it, mm-hmm. a little bit of gore.
Now, I got to ask you, did you get a chance to read any of the original Crimson Rider strips?
I did. I read some of them. I didn't read them all, but basically the heart of everything that I have that's in mine is in the originals. I, you know, there's a few new twists and turns, but it's basically mostly there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really liked it. I was fascinated by the story before. I didn't realize it had a history to it like this. That's really amazing. I like it when something has a little more meat on the bones, like this kind of a thing. So it's really great. Now, I got to ask, what's your role in the story? You sent me some pages to read, which I really enjoyed. I thought they were well done. Now, the question is, you're the writer? You're the artist? Do you do the whole thing? What are you doing in this book?
No, I'm the writer, and I hired a great artist. His name is Tyler Souls, and he's done some other books. Like, he has one through Source Point Press out of Michigan called Hank Steiner Monster Detective that everybody should check out. It's really great. But I thought with it being my first time writing anything, I bet I'm better off hiring, you know, the best artist I can afford and whatnot. And I think it did turn out pretty good. Mm-hmm. I think that Justin Birch, the letterer, and, you know, Tyler have really picked up the slack that I left on the writing side. So,
oh well, I gotta ask you though, the art is done in a very unique style. It's what they call two tones. It's got black, well, actually three if you think about it, black and white, but then there's the color red, hence the crimson and Crimson Rider. And I'm just kind of, did you develop this way to do it? Did Tyler do it? Did you do it together? How'd this work?
When I was coming up with it and I was thinking about what I wanted to do with the character, it was something I wanted to do. I think it has a cool effect when used correctly. Sin City, you know, obviously there's a book out called The Rattler. It does the same thing. I like the effect of it. I thought, you know, with the name Crimson Rider, and then when blood does show up, I thought it might have a little bit more of an effect. So I thought it would work out, and I think it did work out pretty good. So,
Now of course I got to ask at the very beginning, like you said, there's an introductory piece where we see the Crimson Rider as an older female waiting for her life to end, shall we say, and she's wearing a red scarf, which I thought was interesting, because right away we know, and of course she has to convince people around her that she's actually, you know, she's actually killed people. She doesn't look like anybody who would do that. But the artwork has this red scarf around her, which right away tells us she's at least got something to do with the Crimson Rider, which I liked. Did you come up with that? Was that Tyler's thing? Did you come up with it together? How'd you do this?
No, that was Tyler. When he sent me the first couple pages and I saw that, I was like, wow, I didn't even think about that, you know? Mm-hmm. But it is smart to kind of just start splashing in that red pretty early. Yeah, kind of get that thought, the Crimson Rider, in your head.
Now, when she talks in certain parts, when she's reminiscing at a certain place, her dialogue boxes are red with white text on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's a scarecrow who's wearing what looks like it'll eventually become the costume of the Crimson Rider.
Correct.
And she's shooting at it because she's learning how to shoot a rifle. Mm-hmm. And fortunately for us, she's very good at it, which is about it. She turns out real well, and, you know, she's part of a family. Now, talk a little bit about the family, because character's name is Mary. Talk about the family that she's a part of at the beginning of, when the stuff from the past begins.
You start off, and it's her, and it's her dad, and it's her little brother, Henry. And the mom has passed. So they're tight. It's a tight family, and they're kind of recovering from the loss of their mom.
Mm-hmm.
And she leaves to go on a task and comes back. And I don't know, should I go into what happens or?
Well, don't spoil too much. I mean, we want people to want to get a hold of the material and be able to read it. But we can kind of say that what happens is that something bad happens to the family. And she has to kind of come forward and step up and resolve situations, shall we say. And she does a very good job of it. You know, even though she's a younger girl, and see, this is why this is so far ahead of its time. You know, a teenage girl who knows how to shoot and can take care of the family and take on the bad guys. I mean, whoa. You know, I looked at it and I thought, wow, you came up with a great story, because this is perfect for today, because I'm big on strong women characters, especially leads. I like that kind of stuff. And I like the way you framed it. And I like, listen, there's one more point I want to bring up about this that I before we get too much in the past, I don't want to spoil too much about it. Mm-hmm. But there is at the very beginning, the first page, we see a crow flying around. And then when we go back in the past, what's standing on the scarecrow but a crow?
Yeah.
Which surprised me. I thought, wow, you know, see the red color, the crow, all the stuff, tying all this together. I just think that's really well done. That's the kind of things I like. I like it when things, you know, interact with each other strongly, so we can kind of see that you're setting the story up. You're setting the tale up for how things are going to move forward. So I like that. I mean, again, I got to ask, crow, was your idea, Tyler's idea? How did you do that?
That was me. I just thought it would be kind of a cool tone setter. You know, you see a crow fly in, and it lands on a plank of wood, and it looks down at something, and you don't really know what's happening. And then something happens to the wood, it kind of moves and it makes a creak sound and the crow flies off. And then I thought it would be a nice tone setter. You know, you turn the page and then it's actually on top of a gallows that's being used. Mm-hmm. So you'll see that more like I think it's going to be three issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you'll see that develop a little bit more. That's kind of like a little bit of a side story that you'll see. Oh, cool. Continue to happen, yeah.
See, I like recurring themes like that because that feels like somebody's thinking back there. It's not just a, you know, because a lot of stories won't have any depth to them. They'll just sort of, she'll come out and she'll start shooting and, you know, and then everybody's dead, book over. But yeah. This has a lot of promise to it, a lot of characterization going on, things happening. I like the fact that when she first comes across the dead body, Mary does, she reacts the way most of us would. She gets sick at the sight of it.
Right.
Which I thought was really great. Of course, it's someone she knows, so it's something really great. There's also, I thought, the art on the sequence, let's just say their family dwelling, does not last long, and appropriately enough with the color red, looks like it burns to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really something. Yep. See, the use of the color red, I thought, and this is particularly good, the whole crimson thing, as things start to develop, instead of just being the red bandana, we see a lot more of the red in the pages as things move forward, as things become more important and they develop in the story. So I really like the way that you guys put this together. I think that, you know, the artist, of course, gets a lot of credit, but I think you also have the story to inspire the artist, too. So I think the two of you guys together coming up with this, I think, is really, really terrific in the way that the story is told.
Yeah, thank you, man. I think I couldn't have picked a better artist. Tyler is he's really good. It was my idea for the red and the black and the white and the gray tones. But mm-hmm. Well, he came up. He wanted to use the gray tones. But mm-hmm. He is you put something on paper and he reads exactly what's in your mind, which is it's really important, especially, you know, for me. Like I say, this being my first time doing it, it was helpful to put something down and trust that what he came up with was going to be pretty much what I had envisioned. So
how did you find Tyler? Was it online?
Actually, no. I went to Motor City Comic Con a couple years ago here in Detroit, and I was walking up and down Artist Alley, and he had some art out. He had a table, and it caught my eye. And I stopped and I asked him. He had it was a piece of cardboard that was propped up, and it was his character, Hank Steiner, that he had just drawn on it. And I asked him if I could buy it, and he was like, well, that's just kind of to draw people in or whatever, but I'll draw you whatever you want me to draw. And so I had him do a commission for me, which was Hellboy and his character, Hank Steiner, back right next to each other. And I still have it hanging prominently on my wall. I mean, it's one of my favorite pieces of original art I have. And
wow.
And from there, I wanted to get involved in the Hank Steiner universe. I was interested and I kept thinking about it. And then I just kind of forgot about it. And then when I came time for me to do my book, I knew exactly which direction I was going to go with it.
Cool. So this was before you were thinking about doing the Crimson Rider.
Yes.
Interesting. Now, see, you've got an advantage that a lot of the people that work in comics today do not have. You have actually been in the same room as your artist.
Because
I work on a comic called Stabby Bunny, and the a lot of the people have never been in the same place with each other. Richard Rivera is the writer, and Dwayne Biddix is the artist, but he's in North Carolina, top of a mountain. We have to go up there to get him out. But the color artist, she lives in the Philippines.
Oh, wow.
So we've never actually, you know, all that whole group has never all been in the same place at the same time. So you have an advantage. You actually knew him or had met him before you started putting the book together. So it's nice to hear that still happens.
Yeah, I think it's rare. I do think it's rare. But I remember listening to a podcast, and he told the story of exactly what happened with me and him. He said he was like some kid came up and came and bought my book, and 20 minutes later he liked it so much he came back and asked me to do a commission for him, and I thought that was pretty funny. But he's special. Everybody should look him up. Tyler Soules, Soules. He's something to behold.
Okay, because his expressions are really great. I also think the action is really good. It's also very concrete, which I like. There's a sequence where the bad guys, shall we say, are kind of there to bother a family that's broken down in the Old West. And, boy, are they helpless at that point. And I love the expressions that he does with it, and he knows when to zoom in and when not to.
Yes,
which I really like. Now there is one thing when we get to the end on the very last page. Let's just say that this guy is one of the bad guys is not going to continue on. Shall we say.
Right,
and
right.
What happens is he doesn't have a head any longer, shall we say. And
right.
I was looking at it, and I just, the detail that he puts into the pieces of the head all over the place, I was kind of like, wow, how does he know to do all that? You know, a little, I'm not going to say anymore, I don't want to gross anybody out, but let's just say that this is the last page, and let tell you, it really, you know, it gets a hold of you, and it lets you know something bad's going on, because I just wonder how Tyler knew the detail to do all these little pieces parts.
I don't know. When I envisioned that last page, I was thinking of, there's a scene in The Men in Black where they shoot this alien and his head completely explodes, and it always stuck with me. I thought it was a pretty neat effect, and I kind of, you know, most of the book is very realistic. There's not much, there's no supernatural to it or anything like that, and I kind of wanted to add like just a little bit of an embellishment there at the end. Kind of add in a little bit of like Tarantino-esque stuff to it. So that's why we went that route. But he did do a great job on that last page.
Cool. Now, I also got to compliment you on the last sentence in the book.
Mm-hmm.
The last sentence in the book is the Crimson Rider, and there's a red box, and the words are, "I just started a war, and there was no turning back."
Yes.
And then down at the bottom it says, the three words you never want to see in your life is "to be continued." So you set this whole thing up and really made it so that now, let's just say that she's got a lot to deal with. You know, she's made a step in the right direction, but we've got more to do. So you were saying there's going to be five issues of this?
Three. I'm just going to do three.
Okay.
And I mentioned earlier, I mean, it's not giving too much away, but in the second issue, when it comes out, I mean, obviously the first one's not out yet, but the second issue, I told you earlier in Jumbo Comics, when she was done with her hunt, she teamed up with another character named Wilton of the West. And let's just say in issue two, maybe somebody makes an appearance.
History repeats itself, huh?
Correct, yeah.
Well, that would be nice. That would be kind of fun to see. See, knowing that is a big advantage, because I would see that and I'd say, well, that's kind of interesting. I didn't understand the historical implications of all these things. Now, of course, now I got to ask, because how do people get a hold of the Crimson Rider? I got to see the pages, which I really loved, and I want to get the book myself. I'm just wondering, how do you get a hold of the Crimson Rider? Number one is not available, you were saying, yet. So how's this going to work out? How are people going to be able to access this book?
Well, I've shopped it around to a couple of publishers, and I don't know if anybody's going to bite it. I mean, even if they don't, I'm going to run a Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working on the different tiers, the levels, the incentives right now. And you can go on to ZachDavisComics.com, Z-A-C-H, Davis, D-A-V-I-S, comics.com. And it's just, right now, it's just one page, and it's a Crimson Rider coming soon, notify me button, and you can sign up for my email list, and I will keep everybody up to date on the news and when it's coming out, when the Kickstarter will launch, and you know what's to come for issue 2 and 3.
Now, what about Facebook and like Twitter and stuff like that? Are you out there too?
I'm on Facebook, Zach Davis, and then Twitter, I'm at Zach Davis Comics, and Instagram, if you want to follow me, it's Zach Jewel Davis, J-E-W-E-L-L, which unfortunately is my middle name.
Okay, we won't get into that, but I'm glad you got a website, because, you know, as much as it's hard work keeping up with social stuff like that, you've really got to do it so that people know what's going on. If you don't keep people aware, you know, we're all busy people, we get occupied by other things and distracted, and we kind of forget about stuff. But if you can kind of keep us up to date as to when things are happening, when the Kickstarter starts, have you done one of those before?
I have not. I've backed several. I've backed a lot of them, but I've never done one. I'm nervous, man. I've heard it's like going to war.
Well, people call it the daily heart attack. Every day you get on there and you look to see how much money you've gotten. And, you know, there's a lot of folks who can give you well, you're friends with Bob Sally, aren't you?
I've talked with Bob several times, mostly doing what I always do, which is annoy creators to try and get some tips and stuff. He's been real helpful. Bob's been great.
Yeah, if you want to get tips on Kickstarters and stuff like that, I think Bob's a good one. He's had several successful Kickstarters. So he can probably give you some guidance and things like that. And okay. The best way to do these things is kind of watch what other people do. There are several people out there I know who do Kickstarters. And you know, there was a story that came out, and I repeat this on this podcast occasionally, where they listed the publishers. The number one publisher was Marvel. But the number two, according to the number of books produced through them, was Kickstarter.
Really?
Yeah, it was not DC. It was not Image. None of that stuff. It was Kickstarter. There were so many books that were coming to the people's hands through Kickstarter, they considered that the second biggest comics publisher. And wow. So I think you're doing the right thing. I think that Kickstarter is the way to do it. Because, you know, another story I like to tell is the fact that I worry sometimes about how many great stories we missed before Kickstarter was around.
Yeah, no kidding. It's great because, you know, before – I don't even know. Like before, if you wanted to publish a book, you had to do everything by hand, and I guess you would just run the con circuit and try your book. But which I'll do this. I'll do that too when I have books. I'll probably get a table at Motor City and stuff. But yeah, I think Kickstarter is it's probably one of the greatest things that's ever happened to indie comics.
It's amazing. It's, you know, all these stories I get to read that I probably would never have even had a chance to read before Kickstarter came along. And other crowdfunding, you know, there's Indiegogo, and I see people doing it in all different ways. The bad news about Kickstarter, of course, is if you don't get your goal, you don't get any of the money.
Right.
So keep that in mind when you come up with the amount you want. It might be better to underdo than to overdo. At that point, put a little less in there than what you think. And then when you get that, you can do all these stretch goals. And, oh, boy, we're successful. We're definitely going to do it kind of stuff. It just works out so well by that. And I say that for other people because not everybody's done Kickstarters. And I just, like I said, I just think it's such a huge, huge development as far as comics, especially indie comics. I think you're right. That now that we've got Kickstarter out there, I get to read these wonderful stories, and I'm always grateful to be able to do it. I support a lot of Kickstarters.
Yeah, I do too. There's a lot of great stuff out there, and like you said, you know, I think the key is, number one, I think you got to have a pretty good video. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty important, but the incentives are and price points and stuff like that are huge, mm-hmm. And I agree with you on undercutting my price on what I absolutely need to get the money because, you know, it's more important to get the book out there. I don't think anybody's making comics on the underground scene to get paid a lot of money. So,
nope, you're a storyteller. This is what I always tell people is that you're a storyteller and you've got a story you want to get out. And that's the primary goal here. I mean, even if you underdo the money so that you don't necessarily cover your costs, but you get the word out. Because there's a lot of people who go around Kickstarter looking for books like this. I mean, comics and stuff like that. I'm endlessly getting emails from people saying, hey, have you checked out my comic on Kickstarter and stuff? So there are other people who go scouting through Kickstarter looking to see what's new, looking to see what's out there. Because honestly, like as you're proving with Crimson Ride, there's a lot of creativity out on Kickstarter. And I think like what you're doing is great. It's a very creative process you and Tyler are doing and making this story that, you know, like now that I know a little bit more about it, I even appreciate it more. I enjoyed it before I got a chance to talk with you. But now that I understand some of the background on it, I just think this is just a very strong project. And I would encourage people to get out and when the time comes, get out there and support you on Kickstarter.
Thank you, man. I appreciate the kind words. That's really nice. So it's, yeah.
Are there other projects you're working on? Because, you know, this is probably going to keep you occupied for a while. The first one is like having your first child. One person described it to me. You're learning as you're going in. That's the most important thing you're doing is figuring out how this process works. The second one, you know, won't be quite as different because you know what you're doing at that point. So you got three issues of this coming out. Are you going to be doing this for a little while now? Because this is probably going to keep you busy, I imagine.
Yeah, it's going to keep me busy for a little bit, but I do have a little book of different books I'd like to do. But I do think for the, I don't know about foreseeable future, for a little while it's going to be the Crimson Rider, and then I'll probably branch out and do some other stuff.
Cool. Because Westerns, I mean, I've got to ask, of course, you know, this is kind of a Western, you talked about crime being your go-to genre. This is sort of a mashup in the sense that there's a, this is a Western crime. Do you like Western crime, or does it just happen to be that because of the Crimson Rider, you went the Western way this time?
No, you know what? Growing up, I was always watching Westerns with my dad. I love Westerns, even to this day. If there's one on TV, I mean, you can't peel me away from it. I love them. So when I saw that, I was just like, it was kind of like a match made in heaven for me as a huge fan of crime and Westerns. It was kind of a...
Well, very cool, because my dad was the same way. He loved Westerns, and I used to, when I, you know, you get to be a teenager and you're stupid, I used to think, oh, Dad, it's just a Western. Nobody likes Gunsmoke. That's just crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, after he passed, I my family would sit around, in his memory kind of, sit around and watch Gunsmoke. The local station used to run it at like 11:30 on Saturday nights, and gosh, that was such a wonderful show. I didn't realize how great it was. And now I wish I could tell him, you were right, Dad. It was great.
Yeah.
You were right.
Yeah, I was raised mostly on Clint Eastwood, you know, obviously the go-to. But I think one of my favorites is Shane, that old school black and white one. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but if you haven't, it's worth giving it a look. It's real good.
Mm-hmm. Really good, really good. So, I mean, if you've got this other character coming in, maybe some sort of a Western hero group might be coming along. You never know.
We'll have to wait and see.
Okay. Because I don't know if you ever read the one, not the current one, but the previous one was the Ghost Rider from Marvel. The Ghost Rider went around wearing this white outfit that glowed in the dark, which, of course, in the West was something unusual. And what he would do to hide, he had a black cape underneath it that he would throw over himself so it looked like he vanished.
Oh, really?
And I don't know why. I was just completely enthralled by that story. You know, when the new Ghost Rider came with the flaming head and all that stuff, I was much less interested. I just, that whole business about him in the West, if you ever get a chance to look up Ghost Rider, find the original ones from Marvel. Those were fun, I have to say. I enjoyed that kind of stuff. And again, this was another Western thing that I really got into because of the uniqueness of it.
So that's the first iteration of Ghost Rider?
Yeah, the very first one that Marvel did. There was a bunch of Western, you know, Two-Gun Kid and all this stuff that Marvel had done for a while. And one of them was Ghost Rider, which I really liked that. White hat, white mask, you know, white cape. And everything was white, glowing in the dark stuff. But I loved the whole story of it. I just thought it was terrific.
So. Yeah, one of my favorite all-time comics is Jonah Hex. I mean, all of it. I mean, even from the early days, it's great. Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray did a great job on that. I mean, I love Jonah Hex, and I wish that they would bring that back. Mm. And then another one that's pretty good, and it was only, I think, 5 issues, but it was during Marvel's Secret Wars. Mm-hmm. They did a series called 1872, and it's got like Steve Rogers and Tony Stark and stuff, but it's set in the West. So and there's no superpowers or anything like that, but it is. That's really pretty great comics. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really worth giving a look to.
See, I don't know why they don't try Western comics again. Every once in a while, somebody threatens to do it, and then it just never comes. But, you know, there's enough of an audience out here that if you, like Crimson Rider and stuff, if those come out, I think there's enough Western folks that would come out and collect around it and support it. I think that you could do those things these days.
They got my money. If somebody starts publishing Westerns, I'm in, man.
Yeah, because it's, you know, the thing of it is I like my Long John's stories as much as the next person, but I want variety. I want something I haven't read before. And see, that was the great thing about the Crimson Rider was it was something I had not read before, and I was very taken with the characters. I thought you fleshed out the characters real well. I thought the art was gripping. I think the whole thing is just a winner. I think that as far as this goes, I'd like to see a lot more of the Crimson Rider.
Well, thank you, man. That's really nice. I appreciate it. It's you know, when you're first doing it, it's kind of tough to – everybody's their own worst critic.
Yeah.
So it's tough to know if you're doing the right thing when you're writing a story. And it's nice to hear kind words when they come, man. You take them when you can get them. So I really appreciate it.
Well, it's hard to know whether anybody else is going to like it because you're doing this – it's you're kind of alone a lot of the time when you're writing, and you're kind of, you know, when you're working, you're interacting with the artist. It's just the two of you, basically. You're not getting a lot of feedback. And then when the time comes, when it comes out, it really, I think it helps a lot to give feedback, you know, that's justified and things to go forward and stuff like that. My biggest thing I always criticize people for is grammar, because I'm a grammar Nazi. The commas drive me crazy. There's a big difference between let's eat, comma, grandpa, and let's eat grandpa. Yeah. And I'm always nagging people about that, but I don't want to nag too much because I'm always afraid people are going to say, well, read my stuff and proofread it. So I could spend my whole day doing free proofreading, so I don't really want to do that. But on the other hand, learn punctuation, because, you know, that whole thing, what it does, it's a roadblock. When I run into something like that and I don't understand exactly what they're trying to communicate, I have to stop and figure it out. And that's always that's a danger sign when you're doing that in a comic. People could just as well go, oh, enough of that. I don't understand it. Forget it.
Yeah, it kind of takes you out of the story for a second. Yeah.
It's like watching something on the movie screen happens that you don't buy. And no longer are you in the movie. You're sitting in the theater watching a movie. It just sucks you right out of it. Just terrible. And that's I do that with grammar. I nag people all the time about it. And I can't watch the television because commercial comes on and they spell refrigerator wrong in the middle of it. I'll go, oh, no, they spelled it wrong. And all my friends are going, what? What are you talking about? Because I just can't help it. But see, The Crimson Rider, to me, though, it's got all these elements put together really well. I like the art style's different. The use of color is very different. I think, like I said, the characters are strong. I think the pacing's good. I think this is the kind of book I think could do really well, especially if there was ever a group of folks who are into Western kind of stuff. Boy, this would be the kind of thing I think that you could really do well to promote with them.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I was talking to one of my friends and he said it's probably a hard sell because it's a Western, but I think that I disagree. I think with the lack of Western comics out there, there are people that want to read them and they're just not available. Like I went to a comic book store in Ann Arbor, Michigan here, and I was looking for Westerns kind of for reference material, mm-hmm. and they didn't have much. I mean, they gave me the Six Gun Gorilla, mm-hmm. and I had already read stuff, but you know, it's not exactly what I'm looking for. The Sixth Gun is a really good one,
yep.
but it's got the supernatural to it, which, you know, I kind of wanted to stay away from, and mm-hmm. Jonah Hex, obviously, you know, mm-hmm. but there's not a lot of it out there, which is kind of drew me to it a little bit more, you know.
But you see, that's the perfect place for a book like The Crimson Rider to come in. You can spark a Western revival if the book catches on, see, and, you know, there have been some Western movies that just started to take off, and stupidly they didn't follow up on it. There's a movie, Unforgiven, I think that people could have really gotten behind if they'd done more than one of them, but they just stopped.
People
went around saying, oh, they don't like that. That's a Western. And I'm kind of like, I like that. I wish they'd do more of that.
Yeah, every once in a while they'll come out. There was that one last year, I think, or maybe this year, the Magnificent Seven they redid with Denzel. It was all right. It was pretty good. Mm-hmm. I mean, whenever they come out, I go and see them. Yeah. Or whenever there's a comic, I will support it. I love that stuff.
Good. Well, like I said, The Ghost Rider, if you ever get a chance to read, not the Burning Head one, but the original one, I would recommend it. I think this book is a really great start. I you know, have you written books before? Because it just feels like you have.
No, I have not. But before I started, I dove in. I read, Understanding Comics, Scott McCloud. Asked a lot of questions. I think that's a key for anybody out there that is interested in writing, is find small time comic writers or anybody that's done it and ask them questions, because I found a great guy named Trico Lutkins, who he wrote a book called The Jack of Spades, and it's great, and a book called Magma Man. And we had one mutual friend in common, and I just started bugging him and asking, and I knew I was probably annoying him, but he was so kind, and he helped me out with all my questions about scripts and all this, and we become great friends. And I think it's important, you know, it's not an easy thing to do. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of elements to writing a comic that you might not think about. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would say you know, read up and ask questions. That's what I did.
Well, unless you're John Byrne and you think you're better than everybody else, and I'm sorry, Mr. Byrne, but, you know, I've seen that. I think most people, if you ask questions, you're sharing a genuine interest with that person. And most people are real happy to share that kind of information to bring another writer up, because we need good writers still. I don't think that we've reached the end of every story we ever wanted to tell. I think there's a lot of good stories and a lot of good characters that have yet to be on the comics page. So I think you're doing the right thing. I think that you're off to a good start, too. I think the Crimson Writer is just something great. Now, I guess we'll have to, in order to keep up with you, we'll have to go to your website, ZachDavisComics.com, keep up with you on Facebook and Twitter and stuff so we can keep up with what's going on. When you do the Kickstarter, let me know. What we'll do is we'll talk again so we can get some more of the word out. So do you have an idea when you're going to do it?
I don't right now. I mean, it's not going to be a long time. It's probably 2-3 months out, maybe. I mean, I just got to figure everything out. But I'll be in touch with you, and hopefully people will check out my site and sign up for my email list, and everybody will be kept in the loop.
Because it's really good. I really enjoyed it. Honestly, I get people approaching me wanting me to read stuff for them, and you can tell when I didn't really like it because I don't go back with them because I kind of quietly go, okay, that was not what I really want to talk about. But with your stuff, I really enjoyed it. But this podcast, I think, is to find quality stuff that people should know about and they may not. And that's why I'm glad to be able to talk to you, because I think The Crimson Rider is that kind of, it's scratching that Western itch that I get every once in a while. And I just think it does it so well. So I just hope you have a lot of success with it.
Hey, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it very much.
Examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Please be back next time when I'll be speaking with another great comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.